This is Maggie Jones in Natural Wonders. I'll be reading again today from a Sand County Almanac, the April chapter, the part of it called Burr Oak. When school children vote on a state bird, flower, or tree, they are not making a decision, they are merely ratifying history. Thus, history made Burr Oak the characteristic tree of southern Wisconsin, when the prairie grasses first gained possession of the region. Burr oak is the only tree that can stand up to a prairie fire and live. Have you ever wondered why a thick crust of corky bark covers the whole tree, even to the smallest twigs? This cork is armor, but oaks were the shock troops sent by the invading forest to storm the prairie. Fire is what they had to fight. Each April, before the new grasses had covered the prairie with unburnable greenery, fires ran at will over the land, sparing only such old oaks as had grown bark too thick to scorch. Most of these groves of scattered veterans, known to the pioneers as oak openings, consisted of burr oaks. Engineers did not discover insulation. They copied it from these old soldiers of the Prairie War. Botanists can read the story of that war for 20,000 years. The record consists partly of pollen grains embedded in peats, partly of relic plants interned in the rear of the battle, and there forgotten. The record shows that the forest front at times retreated almost to Lake Superior. At times it advanced far to the south. At one period, it advanced so far southward that spruce and other rearguard species grew to and beyond the southern border of Wisconsin. Spruce pollen appears at a certain level in all peat bogs of the region, but the average battle line between prairie and forest was about where it is now, and the net outcome of the battle was a draw. One reason for this was that there were allies that threw their support first to one side, then to the other. Thus, rabbits and mice mowed down the prairie herbs in summer, and in winter girdled any oak seedlings that survived the fires. Squirrels planted acorns in fall and ate them all the rest of the year. June beetles undermined the prairie sod in their grub stage, but defoliated the oaks in their adult stage. But for this geeing and hawing of allies, and hence of the victory, we should not have today that rich mosaic of prairie and forest soils, which looks so decorative on a map. Jonathan Carver left us a vivid word picture of the prairie border in pre-settlement days. On 10 October 1763, he visited Blue Mounds, a group of high hills, now wooded, near the southwestern corner of Dane County. He says, "I ascended one of the highest of these and had an extensive view of the country. For many miles nothing was to be seen but lesser mountains, which appeared at a distance like haycocks, they being free from trees. Only a few groves of hickory and stunted oaks covered some of the valleys." Unquote. In the 1840s, a new animal, the settler, intervened in the prairie battle. He didn't mean to, he just plowed enough fields to deprive the prairie of its immemorial ally, fire. Seedling oaks forthwith romped over the grasslands in legions, and what had been the prairie region became a region of woodlot farms. If you doubt this story, go count the rings on any set of stumps on any ridge woodlot in southwest Wisconsin. All the trees except the oldest veterans date back to the 1850s and the 1860s, and this was when fires ceased on the prairie. John Muir grew up in Marquette County during this period, when new woods overrode the old prairies and engulfed the oak openings in thickets of saplings. In his boyhood and youth, he recalls that the uniformly rich soil of the Illinois and Wisconsin prairies produced so close and tall a growth of grasses for fires that no trees could live on it. Had there been no fires, these fine prairies, so marked a feature of the country, would have been covered by the heaviest forest, As soon as the oak openings were settled and the farmers had prevented running grass fires, the grubs, roots, grew up into trees and formed tall thickets so dense that it was difficult to walk through them, and every trace of the sunny oak openings vanished, unquote. Thus, he who owns a veteran bur oak owns more than a tree. He owns a historical library and a reserved seat in the theater of evolution. To the discerning eye, his farm is labeled with the badge and symbol of the Prairie War. And that's the end of the bur oak part of the April chapter of Sand County Almanac. I have made it my mission to learn about driftless forest ecology in the past few decades, and I want to tell you a little bit of what I've learned. Some 80 years since Leopold wrote, quote, "Bur oaks were the shock troops sent by the invading forest to storm the prairie," unquote, after prairie fires were suppressed. Today, our oaks' future on the landscape is in some peril in our forests. Because of fire suppression, oaks deprived of this ally are being outcompeted in the battle for sunlight between tree species. Maples and other species grow vigorously in the shade. That simple statement tells us why. When we walk in the woods, we see maples of all ages, from seedlings to young poles to large trees, pushing up and crowding and shading oaks. And coupled with the fact that the deer population has never been as high as it is now, and the effect that all these hungry animals have browsing on young oaks, oaks do need our help. And there are many ways to give oaks a boost. If you're cutting firewood, go after green maples. There are many in the early pole stage of growth that are easy to cut, then split them and let them dry. Try to get ahead a year or two with your firewood drying. This will enable you to not always be seeking dry elm for the stove, but actually making a positive impact on some of the serious oak competitors. I call this firewood with a purpose. Another way to help oaks is to start cutting Japanese honeysuckle shrubs and treating the stumps to keep them from resprouting. These aggressive non-natives blanket the forest floor in many places and are suppressing the native biodiverse understory. They can grow so thickly the trees cannot grow up through them. If you need to pick a spot to start, start around your oak trees. Yet another positive thing you can do is look around in your forest and you'll see oaks that are being crowded out by more aggressive trees. Remove these crowding trees and release your established oaks to more sunshine. Even if you've been using a chainsaw all your life, take a chainsaw safety course. They're being offered starting in spring. I guarantee you will learn tricks and methods that you will be very glad to have in your skill set. You'll be much safer in the woods. And if you own some land, let trusted friends hunt deer. The gun deer season is coming up. I urge hunters not to use lead ammunition. Copper has much better killing power and does not break apart and leave toxic residue in the meat or in the leavings in the forest. Scavengers suffer and die when they eat gut piles that have lead bullet fragments in them. This includes our bald eagles and red-tailed hawks. And the tiny fragments of lead can be found far from the impact area on a deer. Many hunters and their families are ingesting these lead fragments, not knowing that they're there. There's a lot more to the story of oaks. They host more than 500 species of our native insects, many more than other trees in the woods, that long-distant migrant birds, vireos, warblers, thrushes, hummingbirds, orioles, buntings, gnatcatchers, kinglets, the list goes on and on. They eat them to fatten up during migration and rely on to feed their young. Let's be sure to keep a promise to next generations of people and wildlife to keep these magnificent trees thriving here in the driftless area. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you so much for listening.